Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Sorry. We are 14 minutes late getting to the microphone. I apologize. We've had some computer issues. Every day, I don't know. I see that hard drive light just grinding and grinding and grinding, and I just kind of wonder. But don't even say it out loud. Don't whisper it into the universe. It's working tonight. Happy? I am. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room. And we've got a magnificent crowd in there already this evening. Good evening, Carol Abel. Good evening, Devin. Good evening, Gerald. Good evening, John. Good evening, Jug of Punch. Good evening, Kathy. Good evening, Kelly. Good evening, Laborman. Good evening, Michael. Good evening, R.L. Smith. Good evening, Texas T and Todd. And good evening to Third Stage Guild Navigator Sparky, who has folded space and is both Sparky and Man Cave in the chat room this evening. And good evening to longtime indefatigable, inveterate veteran chat room moderator, Lottie. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the 29th day of January 2015 edition of Thorn in the Side Thursday, and we've got a thorn about the size of freaking Excalibur tonight. Oh God! And it's got embedded poison stupid down the runnels or whatever the blood gutter or whatever yes. Ay ay ay! And hopefully here in a matter of minutes we'll be joined by my good friend of long standing, my dear friend Dr. Bill O'Brien, to talk about this evening's number one thorn. The program wrote itself early this morning, when I was made aware of, what was it, Friday? Friday, Boss Man Wayne called in and started telling us a little bit about the wild-eyed reactionary bills being introduced by the West Virginia insurgency, legislature. The first Republican legislature in the state of West Virginia in 83 years. And they are trying in the space of weeks to undo whatever little bit of social progress can be said to exist here. This is wild. This is crazy. Oh, by the way, yeah. Also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you will find the Contribute tab. That is how we keep this whole operation on the air. We try to raise $150 every evening, and thanks very kindly to Robert and Jack in Shreveport and Ron, who responded at the very end of the program last night to the late-breaking Sparky's Pull the Pin Challenge. We don't have a hole to deal with this evening. We just have our regular $150 to raise. So hopefully we'll get that taken care of. 15 at 10, 10 at 15, 2 at 75, 3 at 50, 6 at 25. You know how it goes. Or if you prefer the U.S. Postal Service method, you can always mail checks and money orders to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801, with the gentle reminder that neither checks nor money orders should be made payable to Bob Kincaid, but instead to the Horn, because that makes it possible for Boss Man Wayne to then deposit them and take care of all the boot, because he's, you know, several miles away from me, as is the mailbox. Okay? Okay. Well, here we go. It is, and remember, Thorn in the Side Thursday, for any newbies in the audience, Thorn in the Side Thursday is dedicated to those manifestations of right-wingery which make us feel like we've been gut-stabbed. Just, don't! Ow, that smarts! Ooh! Well, no, it doesn't smart because it isn't smart, but you get my idea. Eighty-three years we've managed to get along in this state without a Republican majority. 83 years for Republican great-grandpappies to tell grandpappies to tell pappies to tell sons, one of these days, boy, we're going to get power back, and then, by God, we'll make them pay! 83 years of living wages. 83 years of being able to fully engage the First Amendment's right to freedom of association in the form of union membership. 83 years. And in particular, we have had a whole year, yes, a whole year of tens of thousands of West Virginians who have never had health insurance before being able to just go to the doctor when they're sick. Working class West Virginians who couldn't afford regular health care being able to go to the doctor when they're sick instead of maybe falling sick and losing their jobs and everything that they had. Well, that is, all those ideas are intolerable to a new majority in West Virginia who are driven feverishly by the vivid dreams, the paranoid fantasies, the delusions of Ayn Rand and the Koch brothers and the American Legislative Exchange Council. Yeah. No kidding. There's a photo out there. You can probably, I think I shared it on my Facebook page, Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid. A photograph of at least five of the new members of the West Virginia legislature who, at their little legislating desks, are flying not the flag of the United States of America, not the flag of the state of West Virginia, but that execrable, that miserable, that awful, that hateful, that vile, that disgusting banner of stupidity, the Gadsden flag. You know, the one with the cross-eyed snake on it that says, "Don't read to me." No, don't tread on me. I was talking with Boss Man Wayne earlier this morning, and he said, you know, yeah, okay, I'm all right with don't tread on me, but don't think there's not a few I wouldn't like to stomp. Yeah. Okay, I won't tread. I'll stomp. Is that okay? I guess we can just be grateful that they're not flying the Confederate flag yet. Emphasis on the word yet. Give them time. But then again, understand that that's what the Gadsden flag is a stand-in for now. That vile, piss-yellow flag is a stand-in for the Confederate flag. It is a traitor's banner, a declaration that one despises self-government and that one wishes to be ruled by corporations and oligarchs and plutocrats and Koch brothers. true enough, Lottie. Lottie pointing out, no, Bob, that other flag is on their coffee mug. It's probably got a little hollowed out handle where it'll play Dixie when you blow on the whistle. Yeah. So here it is. On the 20th day of January 2015, HB2107 was referred to the Committee on Education, and after it gets done there, it'll go to the Committee on the Judiciary. It was introduced by delegates Overington, Ambler, Foster, Frisch, Householder, Sabanya, Moffitt, Kelly, Rowan, Zatazalo, and Butler. If I'm not mistaken, Delegate Overington has been one of the Republicans in the House of Delegates for a very long time. And Delegate Overington, among other things, is the one who every year reintroduces a bill saying, you know what we're not doing enough of in West Virginia? Executing people. Need to be executing people in West by God, Virginia. That'll show them. Well, I guess we can take some small solace in the fact that HB 2107 doesn't have a capital punishment component. Dr. Bill, if you're tuned in, feel free. HB 2107 is being referred to colloquially as the Let's Fire Social Studies Teachers Act of 2015. It could also be referred to as the Let's Prosecute Social Studies Teachers Act of 2015. It is, in essence, an amendment of, a rewrite of, West Virginia Code, Section 18, Article 2, Section 9, which was first passed in, 1931? Right after they threw the Republicans out of West Virginia government. Oh, they're gonna fix it because it's right. It needs fixing. Wouldn't have had to fix it at all if the Republicans had been there to put some common sense into the bill. So, here we go. Once upon a time, Section 18, Article 2, Section 9, read, in all public, private, parochial, and denominational schools located within this state, there shall be given, prior to the completion of the 8th grade, at least 1 year of instruction in the history of West Virginia. The schools shall require, and here's where the interlineating and the replacing and amending begins. Again, this is 1931, and a whole lot of West Virginians were not getting education past the 8th grade. It was thought that you could learn your ciphering and your gazettas and how to write and make your mark and sign your name, and the girls could learn how to, the girls didn't even have to learn how to cook. Mama was teaching them that. But the boys didn't have to have a hell of a lot of edumacation to go on down into the mines. Right? Don't take a lot of brains to get blown up or suffocated or buried in a slate fall. And, of course, sometimes, you know, if you're gonna make an omelet, you're going to have to bury some miners alive in the hole. So the legislature, in 1931, in an act of absolute of progressivism, said that they were going to require, before eighth grade, the end of eighth grade, a course a year of instruction in the history of the state of West Virginia. And frankly, West Virginia history is a fascinating topic. We are among the most forgettable of states. Most people don't even know we exist. When I travel and I say I'm from West Virginia, they'll say, people I meet will often say, "Really? I have an aunt in Roanoke." Or, "My cousin lives in Richmond." Many people in this nation do not even know that West Virginia exists as a separate sovereign state in this union. Yeah. So necessarily, don't start with me, Gerald. How far is that from Richmond? Anybody who lives here has put up with that at some point in time. Bless their hearts, my parents lived in Alabama for 35 years. And their next door neighbor, who would watch the house when my parents went traveling, and I've noted before that when all my other friends were, "Hey, it's summer vacation, we're going down to Gulf Shores, we're going to the beach, where are you going?" Back to the hills. Because family was still here, and family matters in the hills and hollers of West by God, Virginia. And so our neighbor, we'd go. My father or mother would go and tell her that we were going home till the day they died. No matter how long they resided in Alabama, they referred to West Virginia as going home. And so our neighbor would agree to pick up our mail for us and make sure that nobody broke in or ransacked the place or threw any wild parties with dancing girls or nothing. And she'd say, and when we said, when mom or dad would, or both of them would say that we were leaving for a spell, she'd say, "Oh, really? Are you going back to Virginia?" 35 years. "No, ma'am, we're going back to West Virginia. I would so like to travel up there. I have a cousin in Roanoke." So we're a little touchy about that. So in 1931... the legislature said that it wanted students in West Virginia, before they left formal education forever at the end of eighth grade, to have a one-year course of instruction in West Virginia history. They went on saying that if a kid should happen to go all the way to the end of high school, 12th grade, the schools shall require courses of instruction by the completion of the 12th grade in the history of the United States, in civics, in the Constitution of the United States, and in the government of the state of West Virginia for the purpose of teaching, fostering, and perpetuating the ideals, principles, and spirit of political and economic democracy in America, and increasing the knowledge of the organization and machinery of the government of the United States and of the state of West Virginia. Okay? It's kind of hard to argue with that. But argue, the new wild-eyed insurgent Republican legislature shall. Of course, a teabagger will argue with a holler stump, and 9 times out of 10, lose the argument to the holler stump, unless, of course, he's got a gang with him, at which point in time they'll just jump on the stump and burn it to the ground. Well, here we go. So I just read you the text of the bill as it used to exist. Right? Here come the amendments. Well, that stood West Virginia well for 83, 82, 81, 80. About 79 years. Now, the new language reads, remember how it said the schools shall require regular courses of instruction? No. The schools shall require for graduation courses of instruction accumulating to a minimum of 1.5 years of instruction in the study of the United States founding documents, specifically the Declaration of Independence. And then the language in the Constitution of the United States. And then they add, with emphasis on the Bill of Rights. And that's pretty much all the changes to subparagraph A. There's a reason for that. You know why it's not enough that school children study the Constitution? Because there ain't nothing about God in the Constitution. And they have to add the focus on the Bill of Rights so they can talk about guns and God. But that's just the beginning. I am just tickled pink to note that Dr. Bill O'Brien is with me now, because he was the first person that I thought of when I read this morning, and I called him practically with my hair on fire. You'll find out why in a minute. Of course, you can hear Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1 o'clock in the Eastern Standard Time Zone. You can hear Dr. Bill O'Brien, who does more to explain how the... You know what? We can pass this bill. We can, and I would absolutely trust Dr. Bill. You want to pass this bill? Let's let Dr. Bill set the curriculum and watch these teabaggers run as fast as they can to repeal it. Because if you start honestly teaching about the history and the founding of the United States, you come up with something wildly different than what these teabaggers have in mind. Dr. Bill, are you there?
Yes, I am, Bob. How are you?
I'm just tickled pink that you decided to join us this evening, because...
Oh, hey, listen. This is kind of a low stress experience for me. I don't have to carry it. I can just kind of listen to you and contribute when I can.
Well, you know, I mean, well, that's why it's fun for me when I'm producing your program. Because
yeah.
I can just pop in when the spirit moves me,
right.
But this that original language in paragraph A there, that almost sounds like the kind of stuff that you were focusing on during the PRISM series, and which has been the focus of the Virtual Center for the Study of the Constitution and Civic Responsibility, isn't it?
Exactly. Bob, exactly. I mean, the irony is the legislation calls for exactly what we're doing. But the fact of the matter is I don't think the members of the legislature here in West Virginia really understand what those primary sources are going to tell youngsters. I mean, if they start to look at the primary sources and really read them, they're going to be quite surprised.
Well, if they're reading them instead, but see, this is where my paranoia comes in, Dr. Bill.
Uh-huh.
Because I'm sure that every member of the Republican majority has probably been provided with some sort of ALEC document that was maybe prepared by, I don't know, David Barton, explaining how when they do this, that they'll be able to teach how Jesus appeared at the Continental Congress and dictated the Declaration of Independence to Thomas Jefferson.
That's right.
I'm being a little bit facetious, but you understand my point.
I understand you exactly, Bob.
Because I was about halfway kidding, but not really. I would trust you to draw up a curriculum based on the primary sources.
Oh, I would love to do it. I would love to do it. And well, I don't know whether you've shared this with the audience yet or not, but they call for the Federalist Papers, they call for the Anti-Federalist Papers, but the irony is both of them, both the Anti-Federalist Papers and the Federalist Papers are gonna surprise them.
And everything that happens around them. Yeah, that's the fun part really starts in paragraph B, because paragraph B and paragraph C are all brand new language that never existed within this statute before.
That's right.
And it says, paragraph B says, the study of the, and if you need to take a moment and just scream, don't even bother to mute your mic. I mean, people need to know how grave this is.
Okay, go ahead.
The study of the history of the United States and the United States founding documents required by subsection A of this section shall include the study of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States, which they've already said, so they're just being redundant here, with an emphasis on the Bill of Rights, using the historical, political, and social environments surrounding each document at the time of its initial passage or ratification. Let's stop there for a minute, Dr. Bill. Why do we have to throw in the historical, political, and social environment surrounding each document? Why is that there?
I really don't know, because if you throw in the social and political realities of the situation which produced the Constitution, you're going to be talking about the stuff that, for example, Alexander Hamilton talked about at the convention, which is about trying to control the majority of the people. And that's what gets me. I don't think they really understand what they're asking for here.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Bill, but aren't the social and political and historical, political, and social environments surrounding the Declaration of Independence wildly different from the historical, social, and political environments surrounding the ratification of the Constitution?
Totally. And I mean, they're 11 years apart, and the social situation surrounding the Declaration of Independence is a revolution, and the social situation surrounding the Constitution of the United States is an effort to undo that revolution. So I don't know. I really don't know, Bob.
This is what you do. I remember we've got a dear friend from long years back, longtime listener named Richard, who lives out in the Bay Area, who used to call into this program and say, listening to Dr. Bill makes me feel like I've done acid. and he meant it in a completely good way. It's, yeah. It just sort of what you have to say about the founding of the United States re-alters our consciousness of what that period was, or alters our consciousness. And what you just said is amazing. One was a revolution, and the other was trying to undo that revolution.
Because what the revolution produced was a political situation where power was on the state level, and legislatures had the majority of power in the state constitutions. In fact, in the state of Pennsylvania, there was only a one-house legislature. There were no governors, no veto power. The power was in the legislative branch, which was closest to the people. And for the first time during the Confederation, the people had the opportunity to require the legislature to generate the legislation that they felt they needed and wanted to help them.
Call me crazy, but that sounds a little bit like actual democracy.
It's the closest we've ever come in this country it's the closest we've ever come to a situation where the bulk of the people, based on majority rule, could control government. And that's really what precipitated the Constitutional Convention, was the effort to undo that.
Democracy was about to get out of hand and break out all over the place, and it had to be stopped.
It had to be stopped because the wrong people were basically dictating what was happening. And James Madison said in one of the Federalist Papers, number 10, that the best people, the most considerate and virtuous citizens, are complaining that our governments are too unstable and that decisions are being made not according to what's right or what's just, but according to the will of the majority. And what he's basically saying is the Articles of Confederation has produced a government where the majority of the people are making decisions, and we got to stop it. It's unbelievable.
Because, among other things, they were the wrong people, weren't they? I mean, you can't have blacksmiths and hostlers and tavern keepers participating equally in government with the moneyed class. Now, can you?
No, you can't. No, you can't.
Because they might want the moneyed class to treat them equally.
Yeah.
That's intolerable.
Yeah. But the irony of the whole situation is the legislature is West Virginia legislature is demanding this. That's what they're saying. They want these documents read. They want the Anti-Federalist documents read. The Anti-Federalist documents is the place where you find concern about the fact that they're undoing the basic principles of the American Revolution, of the Declaration of Independence, with the Constitution. And now they're demanding legislation which requires students to read those papers. I think it's great.
But,
I think it's wonderful.
Well, but it's not. I mean, it's they don't. Okay. The only reason Anti-Federalist is referenced in there, at least according by my lights, is because they think it sounds like it don't like the government, just like us, we don't like the government.
Yeah, you know,
it's anti-federalist.
Yeah, exactly.
You're
right, Bob. That's a good point.
I would also submit to you, though, Dr. Bill, that another reason for the inclusion of the Declaration of Independence in this has to do with the fact that if you've got the Declaration of Independence there, then a teacher can say, and see, before one of the things that brought on the Declaration of Independence, little school children, was a bunch of people objecting to confiscatory taxation went aboard a boat one night, and they throwed a whole bunch of tea into the Boston Harbor, and they called that the Tea Party.
Mm-hmm.
The Boston Tea Party. And you see, little precious school children, we have today a modern-day tea party, which is dedicated to preserving you, precious little school children, your freedom.
Your freedom. That's right.
I mean, I'm being a little bit silly about this.
No, but you're right. But I think it's worth being silly about, because the whole thing is bizarre. The whole thing is bizarre.
It is that. It is that at the very least. I think it. I think it's nefarious.
And, you know, when Well, I, you know, when you get to the point, Bob, in this piece of legislation, when you're talking about the penalties to the social studies teachers who don't do this, it's amazing. I mean, you know, this is an incredible piece of legislation. All I can think of is I'm a professional in California, and I have all of this absolutely fabulous future ahead of me, and I'm looking for a place to resettle and bring my children so that they can grow up in an environment that I will be proud of and allow them to flourish. I think we'll bring them to West Virginia. You know, and I'm thinking, good Lord, what a disgrace, what an embarrassment.
Yeah, I thought we were going to make West Virginia a pro-business climate. What responsible corporation would want to come to a West Virginia where children are deliberately assaulted inside their little brains?
Right, and it's obvious that the issue with science and the environment from a couple of weeks ago was just a warm-up for this. I mean, this is even better. They backed off that. They won't back off this. This is incredible.
Yeah, I think this is going to sail through the House, don't you?
Oh, it's hard not to. If you read it, it sounds like the most patriotic thing in the world. We're going to force people to teach the history of this country, and if they don't, they're going to be suspended from the classroom. I mean, this is great.
Let's drill a little deeper into it. So we've got all this. We're in paragraph B now.
Yep.
The historical, political, social environment surrounding each document at the time of its initial passage or yada yada. We went through that and shall include the study of historical documents such as the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers. Okay, I'm all right with that. I believe, and obviously you believe that high school students are capable of comprehending the content of the Federalist Papers.
Yes, they are, and I think teachers are too if they ever get a chance to read them.
Okay.
I mean, I don't want to be sarcastic.
No, the cynics among us would say if they ever bother to read them.
But the fact of the matter is, none of our preparation of our teachers ever focuses on the primary documents themselves. And you know, I think what you're going to come into here, as you, Bob, as you pursue this proposed piece of legislation, you're going to come through the ultimate contradiction of the legislation, which is the requirement that students have 3 years of American history before we let them do any of the negative stuff.
Well, or before we let them know there's a world outside the United States.
Exactly. Geography, economics, all these things. It's unbelievable. I mean, basically what they're saying is we demand that students have a year and a half of indoctrination or brainwashing before they're exposed to these alien ideas, like the fact that there are other ideas out there, there's a world out there. I mean, my God, this is taking West Virginia basically out of the Union and propelling us all the way back 2 centuries, for God's sake.
And exactly that. So after they say we want them to read the Federalist Papers and Anti-Federalist Papers, they then offer a purpose clause, a dependent clause. That's, and the reason we're going to teach children the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers is, and this is a quote, to firmly establish the historical background leading to the establishment of the provisions of the Constitution and Bill of Rights by the Founding Fathers for the purposes of safeguarding our constitutional republic.
Right.
Now, you are far more schooled than I in this, but how can you establish a constitutional... Or how can you establish a constitutional to safeguard? How can you establish a constitution to safeguard a constitutional republic that doesn't exist until you establish the Constitution?
Yeah. Good point. Good point, Bob. And the fact of the matter is, and I think you know, we've covered this a lot in the past, but the Bill of Rights was not part of the Constitution. It was added later.
Right, and this and under the Articles of Confederation, this was not a constitutional republic.
No.
So even in the body, even in the language of this introduced bill, they're saying that this country was something that it wasn't. In other words, it's they are in the legislation that they want to pass, they are proposing an outright falsehood. Are they not? Yeah.
They are proposing. I mean, under the Articles of Confederation, most of the states that had bills of rights, and I think there were 7 out of the 13, as I remember. I think there were 7 states that had bills of rights. And the argument was you don't need a Bill of Rights with the new Constitution because most people's rights are protected under their state constitutions. And the person that was probably most adamant in this was James Madison, who wrote the thing. And I mean, his argument is we don't need it. This has nothing to do with taking away people's rights. You know, we don't need it. The only reason that Madison turned around and began to support a Bill of Rights on the Constitution was because the absence of one was probably going to sink the Constitution. If we wanted the states to ratify this thing, we're going to have to fold on a Bill of Rights. So the only purpose of the Bill of Rights, as far as the founders were concerned, was political, was mainly to get it passed. They didn't feel that it really contributed anything to what they were about, which was to take power away from the majority of the people by taking power away from the state legislatures and moving it to the central government, to the national level.
Well, let's consider another point here. Now, we've got 2 instances already where they go to the trouble to say we want the historical, social, political background, and then it's we want the study of historical documents to firmly establish the historical backgrounds leading to the establishment of blah, 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 blah. Those things are in there because what? That's weasel language, isn't it, Dr. Bill? That's language that you insert in there so that you can make stuff up about the origins of government in the United States. That, you know, well, some scholars from biology and evolution, remember, teach the controversy from climate change. Teach the controversy. 97 scholars say that human activity has warmed the planet and is endangering our existence. 3 scientists who are on the payroll of the American Petroleum Institute say, nuh-uh. Well, those weasel words in this paragraph allow for the 3, you know, the 3 historians like David Barton, who say America is a Christian nation founded upon Judeo-Christian principles, which it wasn't, and which the history does not support.
No.
But this allows them to sort of shoehorn that into the curriculum, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Bob, exactly. And you know, what it reveals and what this paragraph reveals is that the people who wrote the legislation really don't know what is in the documents they're insisting that be included. And the irony of the situation, that in a sense is a tremendous opportunity to really give youngsters, give students an opportunity to really understand their history. But of course, to me, the most disturbing part of this legislation is the fact that before that we were allowed to even introduce the idea that there's a world out there, we got to have 3 years, 3 semesters, or a year and a half of this stuff, which suggests that their purpose is to continue or assume that education is going to continue to be a process of indoctrination. And I think once you get into the primary documents, you're basically going to end that.
Well, and let's jump down into paragraph C now, which is all brand new language too.
This is the great one.
This is the gold mine.
This is it.
Before students may participate, and this is the why, because this isn't about teaching children history, or
no
social studies. This is about preventing the teaching of something.
This is a call for brainwashing.
Precisely.
This is what it is. This is an admission that what they are saying is, before we allow youngsters to learn anything about the world outside this country, we need a year and a half to brainwash them.
Exactly.
I mean, this is embarrassing. This is, as somebody who lives in West Virginia, I find this extremely embarrassing.
It's kind of sickening when you get right down to it.
It really is, Bob.
So,
but
before
read the paragraph, because I think
before students may participate in secondary level courses, which means what, middle school to 12th grade,
right?
Involving the study of, and you know this just reads like a litany of things that the teabaggers and the John Birch Society complain about.
That's right.
Involving the study of social problems, global economics, foreign affairs, the United Nations, world government, socialism, or communism, pupils shall first have completed basic instruction in, and of all the things to mention, geography,
right,
United States history, United States government and the government of the state of West Virginia, local governments in West Virginia, the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States and the state of West Virginia. That is very nearly 3 years of law school, Bill.
That, Bob, given the power or the influence of standardized testing in our schools, and given the teacher's emphasis on preparing students for those tests in reading, in math, in science, the teachers that we had in the prison program who were teaching American history, that they didn't have any time to teach American history at all. That basically what they were being told to do is shelve the teaching of American history and replace it with reading and math and science preparation and all of this stuff that goes into a better performance on the standardized tests. So this is never going to happen. Basically what they're saying is nobody's going to do this.
Geography?
Yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable.
I'm betting that in and this is pure speculation, Bill, and I freely confess it, but I'm betting this litany of courses was a lot longer before the bill was finally drafted and introduced. I'm betting it was geography, United States history, United States government, home economics, pottery shop, metal shop, But wait, see, this is where I start. I mean, this was the stuff that had me kicking furniture and speaking in tongues earlier today, Dr.
Right.
Bill.
Bob, what they're basically saying is that by the time a student became eligible to learn about the world, he would basically be prepared to take the LSATs for law school.
But only if he wanted to go to Jerry Falwell Law School.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm saying is that, I mean, given the realities of what we're turning out of our K-12 schools, this is ridiculous. The other thing that I think is important in this legislation is it's not just public schools.
No, this is everybody.
Yeah. This is everybody. Yeah, everybody.
But see, in the private schools, they're included, but since most of the private schools in this state are some form of religious school or Christian academy, they can be relied upon not to teach things like demonic evolution or communism or socialism. So there will have to be a public school curriculum drafted out of this. And what I want to know, how do you teach the historical and social environment surrounding the drafting of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States without teaching about social problems.
Right.
Now,
that
social
problems. The social environment. The social problems within the colonies is what produced the movement for independence. The social problems created under the Articles of Confederation is what led to the calling of the Constitutional Convention. If you don't basically connect the two, then it doesn't make any sense. You got to not you have to not go along with one part of this legislation or the other. If you do it,
there's no way not to run afoul of this. How, for instance, do you teach about the impetus for the Boston Tea Party if you can't talk about global economics?
That's right. That's right.
Because, you know, the reason for the passage of the Stamp Act was the need of Great Britain to raise revenue because of the disastrous amounts of money they had spent out of the exchequer prosecuting a war against the French on the North American continent.
Exactly.
And the colonists were more than happy to have the protection of the British army, finest army in the world that it was. But when it came time to pay the bill, they said, well, no taxation without representation. I'd say they were getting represented out on the frontier pretty darn good, wouldn't you?
Exactly, Bob. Exactly. But the point is, you're right. I mean, you can't teach social problems and teach the environment surrounding the origin of these things like the Declaration of Independence without violating this legislation.
How do you teach the American Revolution without teaching the foreign affairs that were necessary in order to draw France into the revolution on our side?
That's right. That's right.
But their real motives, this might, you know what, this might have snuck past my notice, but for the fact that they mention the United Nations, world government, socialism, or communism.
Right.
Because then you find out that, lo and behold, this is the draft darling of the teabaggers and the John Birch Society. Because I can't remember how young I was the first time I saw trundling down the road some rickety, rusted-out pickup truck with a shiny bumper sticker on it that said, get us out of the UN.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
World government? What world government? Except for the world government that exists in the fetid... settlings of the Tea Party's mind that's convinced that Agenda 21 is going to make commies of us all.
That's right. That's what they mean by world government is what they see as a movement in that direction. And that movement exists in many parts of the world, and that's why they don't want our students exposed to the world until we prepare them to handle it, which means prepare them to reject it. I mean, this is... And basically, you know, Bob, the bottom line here is that the assumption is that this legislation presumes that we're looking at students like Cotton Mather looks at students in the 17th century, which was that they are empty receptacles and we have to fill them with the truth before the world has the opportunity to fill them with the devil. I mean, Cotton Mather and says that.
Yeah.
That these children are empty receptacles, and our challenge is to make sure we fill them with the truth before the devil has a chance to fill them with untruths. And so basically the idea is education from the get-go is indoctrination and brainwashing. And this legislation is totally consistent with that point of view. And when you think about the emphasis in this legislature on job creation, on trade, on globalism, on international growth, on technology, on the revolution in world communication and all the things that affect West Virginia. We're talking about producing a group of children who graduate from our K through 12 schools that can't even participate in this world.
No.
I mean, not at all. I mean, we're talking about infantilization. It's not, it's like preparing them for the mines, but there's no jobs there either.
Well, precisely. I mean, you could sit. I don't know. I don't exactly know. I'm better at following Congress than I am at following the West Virginia legislature. I want to attend. If they have committee hearings on this bill, I want to attend them.
I would love to.
Because I got questions. For instance, West Virginia has a rich, albeit blood-soaked, labor history.
Right.
And that is West Virginia history. Now, how are you going, and West Virginia history is mandated inside this bill.
Yes.
How are you going to teach West Virginia history without teaching the social problems that brought about the rise of the labor movement? Are we simply going to erase the labor movement and the struggles of labor in this state and pretend that everyone has simply been happy little capitalists for 150 years?
Bob, you're right. People that know tell me that an awful lot of West Virginia labor history is under the control of coal companies, and we can't get our hands on it. Much of the documentation, and they will not release it for obvious reasons. And so, you know, I mean, I've talked to a lot of people that are really into this, and there's only a limited amount of West Virginia history that's available, especially this issue of labor.
I mean, they've just erased Mother Jones.
Yeah, they want to turn Blair Mountain into something other than what it is.
Well, they want to turn Blair Mountain into a moonscape.
Environmentally, yes, but also historically, they want to obliterate the Battle of Blair Mountain and just, you know, and I mean, it's just unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. And now they're basically putting this in legislation and imposing this kind of responsibility on social studies teachers. I just can't believe it. It's so embarrassing. I mean, to the state, after the last 3 weeks or so of national exposure on the idea of what we're trying to do with climate education and the environment and all of these things with two people on the state board, and the embarrassment that produced as articles appeared in the New York Times and the Washington Post and everywhere else. And now we have this. And we've still got another month and a half to go of before the legislature. You know, the irony of the whole thing, Bob, is the party that controls our legislature now for years has been the one that has argued that the only time we in West Virginia are safe is when the legislature is not in session. Now they're proving it.
You know, and so here is the cherry on the whipped cream. Any person violating the provisions of this section shall be guilty of a misdemeanor, and upon conviction thereof shall be fined not exceeding $10 for each violation, and each week during which there is a violation shall constitute a separate offense. If the person so convicted occupy a position in connection with the public schools, that person shall automatically be removed from that position and shall be ineligible for reappointment to that or a similar position for the period of 1 year.
Right. Right. I mean, that's, you're right. That is the cherry on top.
This criminalizes the teaching profession.
Right. It basically suggests that teachers are going to do what we want them to do, and if they don't, we're going to remove them. We're going to basically suspend their opportunity to earn a living. I mean, this is incredible. I mean, I don't know what to say. I have to hope that other members of the legislature, when they read this legislation, will balk. If they don't, I can't believe it. The fact that there's a whole litany of names at the, you know, that have signed on to sponsorship of this bill. It kind of frightens me. There's a number of them, and I don't know, but I don't think that we can wait for relief from the legislature, because ultimately that's the source of the problem. It seems to me that the people of West Virginia and the people of the nation at large are the ones that are going to curtail or submarine this legislation. This is embarrassing. It ought never to see the light of day.
Well, let me ask you then. Do you think, because one of the first things, you know me, I believe in the right of the First Amendment right to petition the government for redress of grievances. Mm-hmm. And I think something. This is not what we are discussing here, Bill, is not mere, if one may use that adjective, academics. This is the future. A person who does not know where we have been nor where we are going is ill-suited for the journey. Would you not agree?
Yes. Yes. I mean, well, that's the whole idea of history. You're exactly right. That our future is driven by, in very, very many ways, by our past. And to obliterate the past, you know, Bob, when you made me aware of this, and I got to say to people listening that Bob called me early this morning, like 20 seconds after he came across the information about this legislation. And I spent a couple of hours this afternoon doing some research on what, you know, on what this says. I mean, obviously the implication here is that the founding fathers would totally support and relish this kind of legislation. And and I know that that's not true, but I wanted to prove it.
Right. Well, there's another door you've opened, Dr. Bill. Thomas Jefferson would not have been Thomas Jefferson if this had been his curriculum.
No.
Because Thomas Jefferson's education was grounded in Rousseau, in Hobbes, in Locke.
Bob, in 11...
And none of those were Americans or even British colonials.
No. In 1814, in the midst of the War of 1812, Thomas Jefferson wrote a letter to a fellow named Dufif. And I want to read this. This is Jefferson.
Okay.
I am really mortified to be told that in the United States of America, a fact like this, the purchase of an apparent geological or astronomical work, can become a subject of inquiry, and of criminal inquiry too, as an offense against religion. That a question about the sale of a book can be carried before the civil magistrate. Is this then our freedom of religion? And are we to have a censor whose imprimatur shall say what books may be sold and what we may buy? And who is thus to dogmatize religious opinions for our citizens? Whose foot is to be the measure to which ours are all to be cut or stretched? Is a priest to be our inquisitor? Or shall a layman, simple as ourselves, set up his reason as the rule for what we are to read and what we must believe? It is an insult to our citizens to question whether they are rational beings or not, and blasphemy against religion to suppose it cannot stand the test of truth and reason. If this book be false in its facts, disprove them. If false in its reasoning, refute it. But for God's sake, let us freely hear both sides if we choose. Unquote. What a quote.
And so in many ways, this is a struggle that we have been engaged in for quite some time, because one of the things that I thought about immediately, and one of the things I was thinking about when I called you this morning, Dr. Bill, was the bill that was passed by the Senate in what, 1818, was it?
1816.
That forbade the importation of foreign books into the United States.
The argument was it imposed a tremendously high protective tariff on the sale of the importation of public books, of foreign books into the United States. in the interest of protecting our young people from alien and dangerous ideas.
You know, the same thing the Athenians were worried about with Socrates corrupting the youth, right?
Yeah. Oh, exactly, Bob. Exactly. You know,
let me just ask you, because I never got around to it, that 1816 law.
Right.
What was the dynamic social thought of the time that they were so afraid of? Because Marx and Engels aren't publishing for a while yet, are they?
No, this is 1816. This is right at the end of the War of 1812. And this is the beginning of the idea that we really need to create a uniquely American culture, a uniquely American version of the English language. This is the period when Webster's Dictionary becomes extremely prominent. In other words, what we've got to do is break free from Europe, develop our own culture, our own history, and sever the connection from Europe and stop the alien ideas that have existed there from coming over here. And the first thing is to control what our children read. And so what Congress did was create this incredibly high protective tariff against foreign books coming into the United States on the assumption that they would become so expensive that nobody could buy them, let alone read them. And the result is we would be shielding our children from these dangerous ideas. And that really seems to me to typify... Bob, you know that a good friend of both of ours, but a longtime friend of mine, Bob Bliss, sends out a daily piece in which he celebrates the birthday of somebody or some piece of legislation or something that is historically significant. And it just so happened, talk about irony, that this morning Bob's message referenced a piece of legislation passed by the Massachusetts General Court in 1750, entitled An Act for Preventing Stage Plays or Other Theatrical Entertainments. And if you look up, and I did this today, if you look up the legislation on the Internet, the introduction to this legislation says, in an effort to prevent the many and great mischiefs which arise from public stage plays that tend to increase immorality, impiety, and a contempt for religion, the Massachusetts General Court passes this ban on theatrical productions. And basically, what the law did is go back to 1680s when Increase Mather referred to a tavern owner who wanted to establish an amateur theater in Boston as a danger to the souls of men. That was in 1750. And obviously, that's what we're passing here in West Virginia right now, is legislation to do exactly that. We're manipulating and staining the reputation and the legacy of our founders to do it. It is a disgrace, and it is embarrassing for us to have to stand before the entire nation and try to defend our legislature and their stupidity. I mean, it's just blatant stupidity. It's unbelievable. And it suggests how far ideological insanity has gone in this country. I mean, this is incredible. I mean, this is a step back 150 years for our kids. Instead of finding ways like expanding broadband and finding ways that our young people here in Appalachia can participate constructively in the world of technology and of the 21st century, we're basically removing them from the opportunity to even be participants in that world. I mean, it is just amazing to me. I'm sorry, I'm off on a tear here.
No, go, please, for God's sake.
I just can't understand it. I mean, I look at Robert. Listen, this is a statement from Harry Truman, and of course we know Harry Truman during the you know, during the height of the Cold War and all the rest of it. Once a government is committed to the principle of silencing the voice of opposition, it has only one way to go, and that is down the path of increasingly repressive measures until it becomes a source of terror to all its citizens and creates a country where everyone lives in fear. That's Harry Truman.
That's
and
where
one,
we're going.
One more piece, which is West Virginia. I mean, this is particularly, this is a statement from Supreme Court Justice Robert Jackson in the case of West Virginia State Board of Education versus Barnett. 1943, during right in the middle of World War II, Justice Jackson makes the point and said, freedom to differ is not limited to things that do not matter much. That would be a mere shadow of freedom. The test of freedom's substance is the right to differ as to things that touch the heart of the existing order. And finally, in a case which involved the American Civil Liberties Union, one of the judges that ruled in the case, Lowell Reed, made the statement, indeed, perhaps we do the minors of this country, the students of this country, indeed, perhaps we do the minors of this country harm if First Amendment protection, which they will with age inherit fully, are chipped away in the name of their protection. What we're basically doing is trying to ensure that they grow up believing certain things by excluding the possibility of any other ideas. It's the most anti-intellectual, anti-educational position that I can possibly imagine. It's archaic. And the founders would be spinning in their graves over this legislation. It is just an absolute disgrace. I don't know what else to say, Bob.
It is disgraceful, Bill. Let me ask you this. Do you think the teachers of this, and I was alluding to this earlier when I said I believe in protest and petition for redress of grievances, do you think the teachers of this state will rise up in opposition to this?
I would hope so. I hope the West Virginia Education Association does. I can't imagine that they won't take it on. But on the other hand, there's an implied threat here, the removal of teachers from the classroom for a year. In other words, basically what they're saying was they're not going to take them out of the classroom. We're going to make sure for a year that they can't get a job anywhere else.
Right.
I mean, this is
it's the ancient concept of blacklisting.
Yeah.
The ancient and vile and dishonorable concept of blacklisting. Okay, so substantively a question for you then.
Okay.
What is it, because I know where my head is, but I start screaming when I start talking about it. I'm trusting you to sort of be a little more phlegmatic and sane.
You're leaning on a weak reed, Bob. Especially tonight, you know, with this thing. I mean, this is incredible.
Why are they so afraid? Why do they single out social problems, global problems, foreign affairs, the United Nations, world government, socialism and communism? Why?
Bob, I believe these are the hot button issues of fear, but not in West Virginia. Our peoples in our legislature don't know anything about this stuff. This is coming from outside West Virginia. I mean, I believe it. I don't think that the people that were elected to sit in our legislature know a whole lot about these kinds of things. Except that they're hearing the mantra that's coming from Tea Party types on the national level about the threat of world government and they're going to make us all socialists and communists and we've got a socialist in the White House and all of this bizarre
stuff. But how can you know if something is wrong if you don't teach it and compare it to what you think is right?
this always my sense is my concern.
I mean, isn't this education reduced to received religious doctrine?
Yes.
Because capitalism is good. Because capitalism is good.
Right, and that's as far as it goes. And the implication is that our young people really can't understand anything deeper than that. And so basically what we're talking about is we've got to teach them what we believe, what to believe. And it's going to take a year and a half to do that. So before we even let them gain exposure to any of this other stuff, we're going to make sure that we've got a year and a half. And by the time they get into secondary school, the assumption is a year and a half then, they're old enough that a year and a half is going to give us enough time to prepare them to handle what they're going to see in the world outside once we acknowledge that there is a world out there. By that time, the world has passed us by. Our youngsters are. And, of course, the reality is most of our kids are going to laugh at this. I'm hoping that most of our teachers will, too. But most of the kids are going to laugh at this. They're not going to buy this stuff. This is ridiculous. This is bizarre to think that our kids in this age that are using iPhones and iPads and all this stuff to communicate with the world are going to fall for this stuff is ridiculous. You know, I mean, I have faith in our young people more than anything else to not buy into this.
Well, let me ask then. I mean, so this is building a chicken wire fence around the United States when we have a snake problem. Right? You get my meaning?
Yeah, exactly.
But you say you hope the teachers will laugh at it. It's hard to laugh at something, though, that comes with a conviction every time you open your mouth.
Right. Yeah, teachers are going to do it, or they're going to pretend to do it. You know, they'll find a way to accommodate this, and at least on paper, make it appear that they're following the letter of the law. Another thing, Bob, that bothers me is this legislation specifically mentions the West Virginia State Board of Education. And this is the same State Board of Education that just last week was forced to rescind an approach to science education, which was absolutely laughable. And that was the product of two people who sit on that board.
Who is
the wife of Governor Manchin, for God's sake.
Right, and the two people sitting on the board did what they did in order to more appropriately bow and scrape before the coal industry.
Exactly. And, you know, and so basically the education of our children is being controlled, I think, from outside the state. And I don't know where the opposition is, I know it's going to come from the kids, because the kids are not going to buy into this. But they really can't do anything about it. It's going to have to be the teachers, and I don't know whether they're going to be able to, because there's a threat built right into the legislation. It's a waste of time to depend on the board, on the state board. So I think that, you know, what we almost have to look to are groups like the West Virginia Education Association and the American Federation of Teachers. But then I look back to last week and Wayne's comment about what we're trying to do to unions and what we're trying to do to the power of working people in this country. In a sense, what they're trying to do is emasculate the influence of groups like the West Virginia Education Association and these other groups. So this is coming at us from a number of different directions at the same time. And
it is an attack mounted from different fronts, Dr. Bill, but with a singular result, because if you have a student who has been denied an adequate education of his or her world, who is not prepared to enter that world, who then is in more or less economic, because we haven't taught them any economics, because we had to have geography first,
yep.
Who is in economic desperation, and cannot band together in assertion of First Amendment rights to freedom of association via joining a union. And even if she does, she can't earn a living wage. Well, Dr. Bill, that's the right-wing teabagger wonderland.
Right. And the fact, and I thought where you might be going is the first student that we lose to this, we can't recover. We can't undo. And the hope is that we can find ways to derail this thing before it gets off the ground. But
I'm just curious. The primary during the PRISM series, you brought in an expert in the use of primary source materials.
Right.
What was that series called? You provided the series to every participant, huge thick notebook.
The DBQ.
Yeah, the DBQ approach.
DBQ group. Yeah.
That was Phil.
Oh, I can't remember his last name, Bob.
Roden? Was it Roden?
Yeah. Roden. That was it. Phil Roden.
Yeah. I immediately thought of him too.
Yeah.
Because see, I think Phil Roden could take these parameters and probably hand them a curriculum that would shock their little Tea Party heads right off their little Tea Party shoulders.
Oh my God. Well, he's got these mini-Q lessons in civics and American history already out there with primary documents in them. And, you know, our teachers that were in the PRISM program have been equipped with these books. I'm just hoping that they're using them. But this is so, you know, it speaks to the founding documents. But the fact of the matter is the education system that they're explaining here is one of indoctrination.
Bingo. It is not education. It is indoctrination.
It is indoctrination.
I don't know how we would go about doing this, but I'll bet you Boss Man Wayne could answer this question. You know what we need to do? I'm volunteering you, Dr. Bill.
Okay.
If there are going to be hearings on this bill,
right?
I would presume that the minority will have the right to call some witnesses too.
Yes.
I think we probably ought to make arrangements for you and Phil Roden to testify on behalf of the minority in regard to this bill.
Okay. Well, I know I will. I can alert Phil Roden to it.
It's been
a couple of years, but I think he would do it. He's all over the country teaching this primary document approach. And
because,
it's really interesting. Because
I can guarantee you. Okay, I mean, this isn't Joe Namath before Super Bowl, what, 3?
Yeah.
But it's close enough. I can guarantee you that they already have teaching modules and lesson plans in the offing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they are, and I also guarantee that they are most unacademic.
Mm-hmm.
And probably downright fraudulent in their approach to the teaching of the founding.
Right, right. And, you know, and you pointed out at the very beginning of our discussion, Bob, and I think it's worth repeating again. When they talk about the social conditions which produce the Declaration of Independence and Constitution, they are presuming that those social conditions are the same. And that kind of betrays the ignorance that drives this legislation. I mean, they don't even know what it is. They just know what they want the kids to come out of the experience believing. That's
well, this
all
is,
they know.
This whole thing, and let me take just a second here, because I've done the Horn Family Commune congregation a disservice here. I should note that if anybody has any questions or comments for Dr. Bill, or, you know, me, you can dial in on the Gizmo line, 304-663-4676. That's 304-663-HORN with your questions or comments, and they are more than welcome. But it is not – while the focus of this legislation purports to surround the founding – well, it's not even the founding; it's the revolution and the ratification of the Constitution.
Right.
So it's the founding and the ratification. You know, it
right.
really is. It's in your sweet spot.
Yeah.
I mean, you can park this one in the cheap seats. Yeah. Just you know, swinging blind. But it extends beyond that arena. And do let's remember that the teabaggers have an agenda. One of the things that defines them is the fact that they are deeply and abidingly and demonstrably racist. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
With that in mind, how are you going to teach the social problems that led to the Civil War?
Yeah.
How are you going to teach the social problems that led to the civil rights struggle?
Right. All right.
How are you going to teach the economics of the slaveholding South?
Bob, just yesterday on the virtual center program, we were looking at Section 2 of the 14th Amendment, which is a very, very strange section, because what it said is that any state that refuses to grant the ex-slaves right to vote will lose representation in Congress proportionally to the percentage of the population that is denied the suffrage. In other words, what they did is they did not guarantee the ex-slaves the right to vote. Instead, what they did is they promised to punish states who denied them the right to vote. And the question is, why would they do that? Especially when you had people in the United States Senate, like Thaddeus Stevens, who were talking about just openly saying everybody has the right to vote. The reason they didn't do that is because only 5 states in the North in the Civil War permitted blacks to vote. And so the way the amendment was, the section was worded, was done that way so that they could force the Southern states to guarantee the ex-slaves the right to vote, and at the same time not force Northern states to give the vote to African Americans. I mean, it's the most contradictory, hypocritical piece of legislation. And actually, it's not legislation. It's the Constitution of the United States.
Yeah, it's an amendment, right?
Yeah, it's an amendment. Section 2 of the 14th Amendment. And the only way it's phrased that way or worded that way is to protect the hypocrisy of racism in America, and at the same time to guarantee the power of the radical Republican, the Republican Party in Congress, by basically making sure that the South didn't end up infiltrating the Congress of the United States with all these anti-union people. And so it was done for partisan reasons in order to keep them in control. And it was done in such a way that they would appease those states in the North that were still discriminating against the right of African Americans to vote. That's the social conditions that produced the 14th Amendment. How are you going to teach that and do it this legislation? I mean, you can't.
You can't be
you
done.
Know what I mean, you can't do it. So, I mean, it's bizarre. The history contradicts this whole piece of legislation, but thankfully, none of them know any history, so therefore it doesn't matter what they put in the legislation. They can say anything they want. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Well, let me
I feel I'm editing your program.
No. I want this to be what it is, because, see, and you know the philosophy of this program, and so does the Horn Family Commune Congregation. There's other stuff to talk about that this evening. But there are enough progressive talkers out there that I guarantee that it's probably been talked about by one or all of them by now,
yeah,
with probably this topic. And let's understand, it was pointed out to me a few minutes ago, yeah, we're sitting here in our horror contemplating this, but things similar to this have been contemplated and passed by teabagger-controlled legislatures all over the country. Arizona,
oh, yeah.
Arizona passed legislation forbidding anyone from teaching about the the Native heritage, you know, the American Indian heritage in that state.
Right.
Well, this is kind of that. But let's run over to the Gizmo line. I think we got Betsy.
Hey, Rob.
Hey, Betsy.
Hey, Bill.
Hi, boss. Betsy, how are you, bud?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right. So, first thing I thought of, so before I ran down to the very bottom, I just tuned in. I just got home from work like 20 minutes ago. But when I first tuned in, I was confused about what you were talking about. And then as I started to listen, I thought, okay, they're trying to require Texas, they're trying to require West Virginia to not teach about other countries.
Right.
And then, and then Bob shot me the email. My next impression was, oh, they want West Virginia history. Well, we have 2 years of Texas history here.
No, West Virginia history has been mandated since 1931. That's not the problem.
Okay, so but that part's under. All right, I'm having trouble. So all right, so on the, so tell me exactly what you have to have a year and a half of United States history after sixth grade in order to have any other history or geography.
Oh no, that's not what it says, Betsy.
Okay, then catch me up because
that's not what it, no, that's not what it says at all.
At the same time,
before a child can ever be taught about social problems, global economics, foreign affairs, the United Nations, world government, socialism, or communism, pupils shall have first completed basic instruction in geography, U.S. history, United States government, government of the state of West Virginia, local government in West Virginia, the Declaration of Independence, and the Constitution of the United States, and the Constitution of the state of West Virginia.
And sixth grade doesn't count. And anything before sixth grade doesn't count.
Nothing before sixth grade counts.
So,
and
this leaves it open for the last 3 weeks of 12th grade, maybe?
Maybe. Although there may be, by that point in time, they may need a refresher in geography.
Well, let's go back a step before that. What's your dropout rate?
Bill, you want to field that one?
Dropout rate in terms of K through 12?
Yes.
Well, we've got a growing graduation rate in this state, actually. I don't know what the dropout rate is, but I know that
somewhere between 25% and 33%, I believe.
I have faith that our youngsters are going to go along, are going to play along with this, but they're not going to take it seriously.
Here's a couple of problems that I see off the bat. One, our U.S. government class is the last semester of 12th grade, which means that 30% of our kids never see it.
Yeah.
The graduation, by the way, the graduation rate in West Virginia is 74.7%.
So 25% of your kids will never, ever get to this.
No.
That's certainly not. My next question is, in the U.S. economics and rah-rah capitalism, the last time that I was in a grade economics class, which has been 10 years, but the last time I was in a 10th grade economics class, they were proclaiming capitalism as in the context of so much better than communism and the Reds and commies and, you know, all the things that are wrong with that part of the world and rah-rah capitalism. How do you even approach something like that, even if you're in the rah-rah category? How do you approach something like that without comparing it to something else? I mean, how do you approach anything without comparing it?
I'd asked a similar question earlier. How do you know if something is good unless you know what is bad?
Yeah.
And how do you know if what is bad? How do you know what's bad unless you explore it to find out why it's bad?
You're expected to take your teacher's word at face value, which I don't know if that's better or worse than a textbook that's all rah-rah.
Right, because it depends on the ideological drive of the bent of the teacher.
Exactly.
Right, but Bill, you were going to say?
I was just going to say that the implication that Betsy's talking about is that a good teacher can't abide by this legislation. I mean, that's
okay.
The point you make. How do you teach it without comparing? The fact of the matter is you can't. And, I mean, you can't do any of this. And so what I'm guessing the teachers are going to do, like they do with many of the other pieces of legislation that have been passed recently, is to basically, on paper, make it appear that they're conducting this, but once they close the door to their classroom, whether in fact it happens or not. I mean, that's what I kept getting from teachers, the fact that they're creating impossible conditions for teachers. There's no way that a teacher can.
Is that what a teacher wants, when a parent wants to complain about a kid, or a kid wants to complain about a teacher, that parent can say to the assistant principal, oh, and he taught them what communism is.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, right. This is also a not so subtle means of promoting the occasional witch hunt. Because remember, in the punishment section, it's not just if a teacher does it, it's each time a teacher does it, it will be a separate offense.
Separate offense, right.
Wow. All right.
And Betsy, what they're also saying is...
Then the teachers are not going to... Then this is one that the teachers are not going to just shirk. I mean, we've got a bunch of stuff. We're supposed to celebrate National Citizenship Day in September. I have yet to see a classroom celebrate it, but nobody's losing their license.
Yeah.
I have yet to see anybody even mention it, that we should celebrate Citizenship Day.
Now,
I'm just saying, there's stuff out there, but there's stuff that teachers feel free to ignore, and there's stuff that we don't ignore.
Well, you can't. You don't ignore
our license.
Unless
that's our license, we don't ignore.
Right, because you get blacklisted for a year if you're caught violating this.
Right.
You're forbidden from teaching in that school.
Teachers are going to pay attention.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, Betsy, I'm going to thank you very much and roll on here because we got other people.
I have one more question.
Okay, go.
One more question. So my other question is, what provisions does this make for a kid who moves in from another state? So if you have to have all of this first, what year is West Virginia education, and what if the kid moves in the next year?
Well, that was not contemplated.
No. There's nowhere in the legislation their effort is shielding. If this legislation really passed and worked, there'd be very few kids that would be coming to this state.
Well, understand, you know, it was not a problem before these Republicans got hold of it, Betsy, because it says the original language, and I sent you the link, and you can see all the interlineations and the strikeouts.
Right. Yeah.
The
I can't read through it and listen at the same time.
But it says the original language said the school shall require regular courses of instruction, blah, 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 blah. The Republican legislature, in all of its manifest derp, has stricken regular courses of instruction and changed it to the school shall require for graduation courses of instruction. So your point is well taken. What do you do with the poor kid that moves here and hasn't had all of his geography? And there's no answer. Betsy, there's no answer here because this is not an education bill. This is an ideology bill. This is a dogma bill. This is a doctrine bill. This is a bill that was crafted by the American Legislative Exchange Council, Alec, the Teabaggers, the John Birch Society. Hell, I don't know. Maybe Alex Jones, or possibly the Koch brothers.
Can we find out who wrote it?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, we know who introduced it, but we don't know where it came from. But I'm guaranteeing you that delegates Overington, Ambler, Foster, Frisch, Householder, Sabania, Moffitt, Kelly, Rowan, Zatazzolo, and Butler don't have the brains between them to come up with this.
Yikes.
Well, it's a yikes. I agree with you. And Bob's point about blacklisting is correct. Not only will they pull you out of your classroom, but they'll make sure that for a year you can't get employment in anybody else's classroom either.
Well, the statute says that.
It's a licensure issue. It's not just
shall be
your position.
Shall be
it's a licensure.
Betsy, shall be ineligible for reappointment to that or a similar position for the period of 1 year.
Year. And that's basically we're talking about the ability to earn a living. And that seems to me to be quite a powerful hammer over people. I mean, they're basically not leaving.
Those are the ones we take seriously. The things that are once a year, and if you get caught not doing it, somebody says, hey, you forgot this holiday. Do it next year. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is not that.
We skip them because what next year?
Well, and you've got a test to teach. Betsy, thank you very much. We got more lines rolling in. All right.
Okay, thank you.
Bye now.
Bye.
And by way of, again, if you want to talk, the phone's been ringing the whole time. Dr. Bill, there are a lot of people who want to talk to you about this. Area code 304-663-HORN. Area code 304-663-HORN. That is the only line to dial if you want to engage in this conversation, because Dr. Bill is on the other one. So area code 304-663-HORN. I think we got another line coming in here. Just one thing. I want to point this out for the novelty of it. So there's no language in this all of this stuff that we've discussed, Dr. Bill, that points out that parents have any say-so in this whatsoever.
No.
All right. Well, what we are dealing with is West Virginia Code, Section 18, Article 2, Subsection 9, 18.29 of the Code.
Mm-hmm.
18.29, Paragraph D of the Code.
I know where you're going here, Bob.
Is the paragraph that mandates that children in West Virginia schools, in West Virginia secondary education, be taught the subject of health. And that health education include instruction on the means of transmission of the human immunodeficiency virus, or acquired immunodeficiency syndrome, HIV/AIDS. And yet, that subparagraph says, the parent or guardian may exempt the child from participation in the instruction by giving notice to that effect in writing to the school principal. Now, a parent has the right to exempt a child in this state from instruction that might very well save their lives. But a parent has no right whatsoever.
That's a good point.
To object to the bodlerization of the history of this country.
Right.
And the denial of basic elements of social education to a child. What does that tell you?
Yeah, that's a great point, Bob.
Let's go back to the Gizmo line, 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN. We'll have a caller on, so please hold. If you want to dial in, please hold off until this caller is done so that we won't get the beep, beep, beeps during the conversation. Okay, great. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. This is Todd calling from South Carolina.
Hey, Todd, how are you?
I'm okay. I was okay until 7 o'clock when I tuned in and heard this crazy. This is I just can't tell you how terrible.
And you're saying this sitting in South Carolina, Stan.
Well, that's exactly right. Well, we had the corridor of shame, right, in terms of education. And I'm going to tell you, I will never forget. I've mentioned this to you before, but when I was working for the No Child Left Behind program from the university, when I would go to West Virginia to different schools in different areas, and I was shocked at the library hours. I mean, the education is already stunted in terms of the resources for the kids, right? So, all right, let me slow down because I'm just really upset. I'm very upset. Okay, so what I'm trying to say, and Dr. Bill.
It's okay, Todd, because it has taken me all day to get this calm.
Dr. Bell, the service that you provide is unbelievable, and anyone who does not listen to your archives, they're missing out. And this reminds me of your program when you were talking about that guy Helper who wrote a book. This kind of reminds me of that in a way.
Yeah.
In terms of censorship, but my point is that now, Bob, you hit on this a few minutes ago. I firmly believe. I mean, I keep up on this thing because I used to be in education, and this is a Koch brothers propaganda, but this is definitely their creation. See, they're working from the top to the bottom. They're working in universities now to try to get rid of liberal professors in universities, which they are able to do because they get so much money. Okay. You've already had one professor in Illinois that he was set up for tenure track and everything. Then he got a letter. They told him he had to leave because he was telling the truth about, what Israel does in terms of the Palestinians. And which, I mean, that's the ultimate bastion of free thought is the university, right? So they're working at the top, and now they're working via charter schools and public schools. See, what I believe is that they're using West Virginia as a pilot test. A pilot program for this, just as West Virginia is a pilot program for environmental devastation, this is a test program for educational devastation. Because it's just like what you presented. You hit the nail on the head. This is obvious to people who keep up with politics. The way that bill is orchestrated, the way you presented it, they have this mechanism set. You know, when you're a teacher, you'll get blackballed. Nobody's going to hire you. And if you're a good teacher, how can either you're going to quit or you're going to have to circumvent the system?
Yeah.
Dr. Bill, you guys are there. You're on the ground in West Virginia. This is a test case. I'm telling you. This, I firmly believe this. Okay? You guys really have to. I can't get there. If this is a lab, this is almost like what they're doing in Bell Harbor, outside of Detroit. You know, where they just take over.
This is
Koch brothers. Now, what else is going on here with this? I mean, if you can't teach this, and this is a Southern, they knew where to start. They knew where to start because I remember I started college in the South, and I was just shocked at how kids did not ask questions. In class, you know, and I went to a very liberal Quaker school, you know, in high school, and we were taught to question authority.
Yeah.
And
look where that got you.
Yeah.
But what do you think? Do you think this is a Koch brothers invention here?
I think you mentioned of the fact that, Todd, that this is a test case. That they're using West Virginia as a testing ground for this, it has some merit, especially if it's not challenged. I mean, I can't imagine that it won't be, but I really think. I mean, Bob mentioned some time ago about the fact that there'll be public hearings on this. I'm hoping I know about them because I'd like to be there. I really would. I mean, this is crazy.
I have a headache now, and I never get headaches. I mean, when you start messing with kids' education, that's really bad. It's a terrible.
Oh my God.
Todd, you say when you start messing with kids' education. No. Take the word education off. You're messing with kids. You're messing with kids in their existential entirety. You're messing with their future. You're messing with their minds. And in many other contexts, we call that mental abuse.
That's absolutely what it is, Bob. See, you know, this is the thing. This is exactly when you said Alec and Coke. I was thinking that, and you said it. I'm like, okay, well, that's at least two of us. But you just have to put these pieces together. They don't want the children to know. You got to understand between Walmart and Coke. If we don't watch out, I mean, we're almost there. This is becoming quickly a fascist country, right? We got this two of your corporations that run everything. You know, you go to Walmart, it's almost like the company store, like back in the CCT, you know, in Soviet Union. Basically, in a lot of towns, that's the only place you can go to get things, right? So they're going to make education like that because they don't want the kids to know how fascist, they don't even want people to know what fascism really is.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make any sense?
It makes a lot of sense. There's one piece of this, Todd, that I think is important to think about, and that's the fact that when you say that they're messing with kids' education, the fact that they feel comfortable even proposing a piece of legislation like this kind of says an awful lot about what the education from their perspective has been all along. I don't really think that they see anything different. I think that I really believe that they think they're just refining in the face of challenges, especially the world. Their decision is the same kind of offense that they want to put up on the southern border to keep illegal aliens out. They want to do this to keep foreign ideas out. I mean, it's unbelievable. And what it says is this must be the way they look at education from the get-go, or they wouldn't do this. Then it would get everybody's attention. My guess is there's going to be a lot of people that won't see anything wrong with this. And that's what scares me.
That's because they're already indoctrinated. I really believe, like, they just want a group of worker bees who don't question anything, and they say, oh, go, you know, go in the mine, you know, go step in that sludge. It's okay. It won't hurt you. You know, that type of thing. We've been dumbed down ever since Reagan brought in, the public schools. Are just deplorable. It's really a shame. Not all of them, but it's sad that we have money to build bombs and kill people unnecessarily, and we refuse to educate our children properly.
Yeah.
And you can't. How in the world? How in the world can you have those preconditions before you even teach?
Well, you can't.
Exactly.
This is not a bill about education. This is a bill about indoctrination. I think we fairly clearly established, Todd, that you cannot teach the Declaration of Independence without teaching the social problems that led up to it. You can't teach the Constitution without the ratification of the Constitution or the reason for the Bill of Rights, especially the reason for the Bill of Rights, without teaching what the concerns were of the people who leaned on Mr. Madison, who didn't want one in the first place, as Dr. Bill has noted, James Madison was a high-minded fellow. Would you agree, Dr. Bill?
Yes.
And he was crafting this pure exercise in government. And it was inconceivable to him, and I know the meaning of that word, that a government would ever even bother to suppress people's speech or engage in illegal searches and seizures or, for God's sakes, quarter troops in somebody's house or mandate whether or not somebody could own a gun. It was simply beyond. Is that fair, Dr. Bill?
Yes. And the only other piece of that, Bob, is Madison's understanding was that really wasn't what the Constitution was about at all. This was not an effort to take national control over people's rights to free speech and freedom of religion and all these other things. This was a case of making sure that the people most qualified to make the major decisions were able to make them. And the only way to do that is to take away the opportunity for the people that are not qualified to make such decisions to make them, which is the majority of the people. I mean, that was it. It wasn't a question. You know, the Constitution of the United States was designed principally to take the locus of power away from the ability of the majority of people to get control of it. And that meant that what you were doing, if the majority couldn't get control and make decisions, you were guaranteeing that the minority made the decisions, and that's exactly what they wanted, because that was safe.
Hey, Dr. Bill, do you think that these ideologues, these reactionary insurgent Republicans might have a hissy if somebody mentioned that, cool, we'll teach the economic meaning of the Constitution? Charles Johnson, was it?
Charles Beard.
Beard, I'm sorry.
Charles Beard.
Yeah, Charles Beard. You think they might have a cow?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Todd.
What kind of network do you guys have there in West Virginia? Because this is very, I'm taking this serious, I mean, this is as serious as death. This is insane. And the reason I'm asking is because this has to be quelled. And I can see this going to the Supreme Court, which we know is a problem right now.
Well, wait, Todd. I think some opposition will arise. There will never be the amount of operation that is deserved. It's not like there are going to be people getting dragged out of the Capitol Rotunda for singing like it was in Wisconsin. But there will be some opposition, but let's understand something. And whether it be right to work or prevailing wage or access to health care, all these things that these Republicans are attacking, West Virginia has a rather unique situation. Well, I don't know how unique it is. But usually when we think about overriding a veto, we think in congressional terms where it takes a two-thirds majority to do that. In West Virginia, a gubernatorial veto can be overridden by a simple majority of both houses. And the Republicans have way more than that.
Yeah.
So even if this bill were to pass and the governor were to veto it, it would be overridden.
All they have to do is pass it again.
Right.
Yeah.
And they either wait for the next session, or if there's not enough time remaining, or they strong arm the governor into calling a special session. Look, they're taking away the governor's prerogative relative to the health insurance exchange. To put it in the hands of the legislature, why shouldn't they take away the governor's power to call a special session of the legislature? I'm not kidding. These are insurgents. And if it goes to the West Virginia Supreme Court of Appeals, the West Virginia Supreme Court of Appeals will say, well, the legislature legislated. We don't have a hand in this. I doubt they'd even take the petition.
They wouldn't even take it up.
No, I think the way to go is to do as much as we can, and I'm using we in a very general term, but to publicize this and let people outside the state of West Virginia know what's happening.
That's why I'm spending this much time on this issue this evening. And as Kevin in Colorado Springs pointed out by way of email a little bit ago, I'm not trying to turn this into a West Virginia-specific program or a West Virginia-specific show generally, but Kevin wrote from Colorado Springs a little bit ago, Dr. Bill is exactly right, but if you think this is confined to West Virginia, we went through this same fight about how and what we teach history here in Colorado. It was Tea Party driven, just as it sounds like this West Virginia bill is. Welcome to the America in the 21st century, where we don't teach kids, but rather indoctrinate them.
Yeah.
And that's how we know that this is not, for want of a better term, that's how we know that this bill is not an organic issue that simply flew out of the cracked open head of some teabagger West Virginia legislator like Athena arising from the head of Zeus, okay? This was handed to them. This is part of an ongoing process. So it's not illegal, so it's not technically a conspiracy, but it's that kind of thing. there is out there the American Legislative Exchange Council, and there's also outfits like the one run by Chris Cobath, whatever, the Attorney General or former Attorney General of Kansas, who drafted all the anti-immigrant legislation that suddenly sprung up all over the border states like mushrooms after a spring rain. These things happen in clusters because this is part of an overall ideological agenda of the vicious right-wing, well, look, let's say it, fascist movement in this country. I say fascist for a good reason, because this is typically fascist behavior. I had a note a little bit ago from Jim in West Virginia, who pointed out, let me find it here, he says, this is a policy of what 1930s Germany's education was called ideological coordination.
Yeah.
Look where that left them.
Yeah.
Well, look, you know what can happen? If this goes through, all right, let's say this floats, okay, and they find it okay in West Virginia. If it goes to Texas, where the textbooks are manipulated, they're already messed up. Unless you go,
because
honest to God.
Oh, no. Todd, you've got your horse before your cart. I'm sure there already exists a textbook that will be adopted almost without thought. That includes, you know, Ayn Rand, and includes, Jesus at the signing of the Constitution. You know, stuff made up out, I mean, I'm being slightly facetious, but not particularly, stuff made up out of whole cloth by people like David Barton.
Yeah.
Okay? Robert writes in from Australia and says, growing up, I was taught that this stuff is what evil communist Russia was like.
Yeah.
Well, we have to quell this. This has to be squashed. And this is just unacceptable bullshit. Excuse my,
I think you're right on.
This is
amazing.
This is the thing. Our kids are, oh my God. I'm just telling you, if you're ever in these public schools, it's bad enough. This is just, this is what they've done. They've dumbed the kids down so much, and then they're going to give them misinformation. They're left with nothing. They may as well not go to school. They may as well just stay the hell home.
Yep.
Well, Todd, it's awful good to hear from you. I appreciate the conversation, and I want to make sure that everybody, since we're operating on one line, I want to make sure that everybody who gets an opportunity to jump in on this conversation has that opportunity.
Let's talk.
Todd, thank you for what you said about the virtual center. I appreciate that.
Oh, it's always great.
Thank you, Todd. Have a good evening.
You too.
Bye now. Our buddy Todd calling from South Carolina, Stan.
Uh-huh.
Let's see. Hold on. I'm fooling with the phone here. So the line is open, area code 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. A couple of notes coming in. One from the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas, Stan, who says, so much control from your legislators for a party that allegedly doesn't like a lot of social control, they surely do dish it
right
out.
Yeah. Big government.
Yeah, I mean,
we're gonna solve the problem of big government. It's going to be a new day in West Virginia.
I mean, this is pretty big government, though, isn't it, Bill?
Oh yeah, this is pretty powerful. Controlling and dictating what your kids will believe when they graduate from school and what they don't. I mean, this is wow.
Jenny writes in from Wisconsin. We have to wait until next week to hear Scott Walker's plan for public education here. Maybe this is a foreshadowing. And does Dr. Bill have anything to say about what Scott Walker is doing to his alma mater in Madison?
Oh.
And Jenny closes saying, and Dr. Bill, I would love to be in your brain just for one day.
Oh, I don't know. I'll tell you, I'm gonna pass that by making reference to John Kaminsky. Bob, when we did our last year of PRISM, I can remember having lunch with John Kaminsky one day when he was here, and I mentioned Scott Walker to him, and he went on the entire lunch about Scott Walker and how he was destroying the university and destroying education, and it was unbelievable. But at that time, he didn't really. He was hoping that Walker's initiative against unions would be defeated. Of course, we know it didn't happen.
And of course, you know, you've got I have a terrible everybody knows now, I have a terrible man crush on Wisconsin. I love that place. As cold as it gets, I think I could live there quite happily. And of course now they're under attack from some of the same interests that have long attacked West Virginia. But you know, Wisconsin had, and you've remarked upon it, Wisconsin had a full-blown philosophy about how to build how to be a political community. It was called the Wisconsin Idea.
Yeah, that's right.
And, of course, the whole reason for what Scott Walker is doing up there is to dismantle in its entirety the Wisconsin Idea, because the Wisconsin Idea is at its very core progressivism.
Yes. The whole idea behind land-grant colleges and the Morrill Act and all of that is that education ought to be basically turned loose to the service of the people, and that what education should do, what universities should do, is to become a collection of highly skilled people who can provide the services to improve the quality of life for the citizens of that state.
It worked like gangbusters in Wisconsin, didn't it?
Great. Oh, yeah.
Well, let's jump back to the phones real quick. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Gerald.
Hey, Gerald, how are you?
Oh, well, do I need to say it?
I know.
Hey, you know, one thing I keep seeing in the chat, a lot of people are saying, you know, what are the teachers going to do about this? Something that people who don't live here probably don't understand is these guys aren't listening to the teachers. They're not listening to the teachers' unions. Hell, they're not listening to anybody. But Big Energy, the Koch brothers, you know, Americans for Prosperity, who, by the way, just opened an office here in Charleston last year prior to the election.
Well, there you go.
Well, that kind of leads back into what Dr. Bill was saying about, Todd brought it up, I think, about a test subject for somewhere else in the country. And I agree. I think this is a bigger scheme to undermine state legislatures. And once you control them at the state level, you know, what's to stop them? And another thing people don't really realize here is the Democrats that we have had in this state, at least from my observation, aren't really Democrats. They're more like Republican light, or as you call it the other night, I think, Naugahyde Republicans.
Naugahyde Republicans, yes.
Naugahyde, that's good, yeah.
So, you know, we have, you said, Republicans, the real leather, or the Naugahyde ones, and the voters chose the real ones. So, you know, those are some of the things that people who don't see it, you know, don't live here, don't realize, and you know, because that's what makes it so hard. If I lived outside of the state, I would say, wow, this is unbelievable. But like I mentioned to you before, earlier in the program, you know, we saw this in other parts of the country, and it was kind of like, you know, wow, I can't believe this is going on. But
it hurts, doesn't it, Gerald? Because for all of our problems here, we used to be able to say that West Virginia state government has always bowed and scraped in front of the coal industry.
Yes, it's no doubt about that.
It's a fact of life. But there were
not going to change.
There were occasional flashes of actually giving a damn about people. Now, we weren't going to give a damn about whether or not we were poisoning them to death, but you know, we were for instance, Medicaid eligibility in this state before the expansion of Medicaid was actually broader than it was in most states. In Alabama, for instance, to this day, if you've got a cardboard box to sleep in, you can't qualify for Medicaid. In West Virginia, you could. If you were the parents of small children, working poor, you could qualify. Well, that'll be gone pretty soon.
Now, on the subject of health, there was one of the bills that I noticed, and I'm calling it the smoking bill. Did you see that one?
Oh, yeah. Well, absolutely.
We're going to take the decisions of the health department, the health department should be making, we're going to give it to the county commissioners.
County commissions. Oh, yeah.
are you kidding me? I mean, I can't believe this. I mean, I'm living in a dream. It's like I'm living in a dream.
Well, but see, these teabaggers, Gerald, they don't appreciate the fact that when they get done teabagging in the legislature and they want to go and throw back a few shots of old Panther down at the corner of Virginia and Capitol Street, that they can't light up a cigarette there while they got the bottle in front of them.
Well, they don't need to. They do it back in their offices in the state Capitol building.
I think they were doing it when they drafted this bill, don't you?
Yeah, it sure seems like it.
I was looking, by the time I was done with paragraph C, I was looking for paragraph D, "'Twas brillig and the slithy toes did gyre and gimble in the wabe."
It's just unreal. I mean, you know, with the attack on prevailing wage again today, which, by the way, they took off the agenda. I guess so many people showed up, it scared them again. But, you know, they're going to do something there. And the right to work legislation, it goes back to the revisionist history. And I keep thinking, I just can't get the book. Well, actually, there was a movie too. You know, Orwell's 1984, our protagonist. What was his job? You know, put the history down the memory hole. Whatever conflicted with what Big Brother said, we just make it go away. So no one really knows what the real history is because it's been changed so many times. And, you know, that's where we are. I wanted to get that off my chest, but, you know.
You did it. It was great.
Well, the thing with the understaffed schools, and this I see this with my son in elementary school, and he's in a specialized class, but he has had a retired substitute teacher for the past, I think she's been here 3 years now, because they cannot get the position filled. Nobody will take that job. And I am certain that is not an isolated incident within the county or even within the state. So,
well, it's not. How many, Gerald, Dr. Bill, either one, how many county school systems in this state have been declared failures and taken over by the state board?
Right.
I know Lincoln County was.
So was Fayette. I live here.
Fayette County, yeah.
I live in a county where the school board has time to take up the issue of whether or not to have a moment of silence, but somehow can't manage to keep students in their classrooms. I live in a county where neither state nor county is able to stem the tide of bullying here. And where, you know, statewide test scores or standardized test scores are abominable.
And that's not isolated to just Fayette County. I mean, it's true here, even Kanawha County, you know, the capital of the state. It's that way here. It's all over. And we're going to, it's just, you know, I don't understand. I really don't.
Well, they have to be challenged.
Well, they sit down there in the legislature with their little fucking Gadsden flags on their desks, and they're supposed to be representing the people of the state.
Let's talk about that for a minute. Dr. Bill, Gerald, are y'all, the idea, what would happen if a member of the West Virginia legislature who was, say, a progressive Democrat, I know there aren't many, but we're going to pretend one exists.
Okay.
Sat at her desk with that baby blue UN flag. What would happen?
Oh, I couldn't even imagine.
Oh wow. Yeah.
It would be turmoil.
And yet we've got no less than five members of the legislature now who sit at no American flag, no West Virginia flag, but they've got that urine yellow rag.
The snake flag.
Yeah, the snake flag.
Yeah.
And you know, that's okay. And by the way, just for the fun of it, Lottie provided me this article from the Huffington Post about the issue we've been talking about this evening. A reporter by the name of Rebecca Klein at Huffington Post managed to get through to one of the sponsors, Delegate Michael Moffitt, one of the sponsors of the bill, 2107, that we've been talking about this evening.
Right.
Guess where he went when asked, why did you introduce this bill? Well, they learned about Islam with posters up in the school. They're speaking about Islam and the Islamic faith, yet the schools can't even mention the word Bible and Christianity. I do see we're focusing on other religions and belief systems as opposed to learning about the Judeo-Christian, hang on to something, Dr. Bill, founding of our country.
Okay.
The Judeo-Christian founding of our country.
And there's your answer. Now you see where shit like this comes from.
That's right. This is incredible. That's an incredible point. That's my God.
Because see, Westside High School in Wyoming County, I don't know if you know this or not, Dr. Bill, was inundated last week.
From all over the country.
Yeah.
Yeah, all over the country.
Because some children had made posters about what people eat in Islamic countries.
So far the principal or the superintendent is defending the schools. I don't know how long she's going to be able to withstand it, but so far, not the superintendent. She's the principal of the high school.
Robin, well, she's probably on the short list to be replaced then, I'm sure.
Yeah. I was going to make Bob's comment to Bob when he was talking about Fayette County. You know how quickly Keith Butcher blew in and out of that county?
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Like a whirlwind.
We know him, don't we, Bob?
Oh, yes, we do.
Oh, yeah.
Moffitt went on to say that he had no problem with learning about other cultures and the United Nations. I think we do miss a lot of how we were founded in original documents. Look, if you walked up to Michael Moffitt and said, what is Federalist 10 about, Dr. Bill? You got a $5 bill in your pocket?
Yeah, no. Yes, I do.
Yeah, see, and you wouldn't bet it on him being able to tell you the Federalist 10, that's about 10 Federalists.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Because you can't convince me that and Gerald, I know you know who Delegate Overington is.
Well, kinda.
I mean, this is a real whoop, get him, don't mind me, ha ha, you know, type.
He's the one that's where all the batshit crazy bills come from, right?
He's a factory. You cannot convince me that he has even the first clue.
Well, prior to this legislature, I didn't really read those bills too much because I wasn't too worried about it. But now, let's see. We got a lot of these posting here. You got Overington, Ambler. Foster, that's one of my householders. Sabonia, that's Putnam County. Oh, yeah, see, they're all right there, you know. But, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't recognize some of these names.
I didn't either. But I do recognize Overington.
I know Sabonia. She is from Putnam County, I believe.
Yeah, she's a loon, isn't she?
Yeah. I think she's on the fringe anyway.
Okay.
And she's been in there a while. She's been, of course, that county is solidly blue anyway. I mean, red.
Yeah. Who is just because it's such a not usual West Virginia name, who's Zatazalo?
You know, it must be up north. That would probably be one of the northern counties.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't even know at which ones are. Are freshmen this year.
I can tell you for certain. I'm gonna. You know what? Yeah. You know what? You know what, Bill? I think you and I need to have lunch with Wayne real soon.
Okay. That's a good idea. I'd look forward to that.
We need to have one of our salad cabals.
Yeah.
Hey,
oh,
Gerald.
God.
Let me. I'm gonna get off here and get someone else to get a chance to call in. But in closing, I would just like to say, you know, be very afraid, because these guys are loose cannons, and as you've already stated, you know, they've got a veto-proof legislature.
Well, Gerald, the only issue I would take with you, you say they're loose cannons. And I suppose I'm splitting hairs at this point, but that metaphor implies, you know, a loose cannon just sort of randomly rolls around the deck causing devastation in high seas when it gets loose, right?
Right.
These guys are not loose cannons. These are aimed cannons.
I stand corrected.
This is, and I have used the word over and over again because I want people to understand. I started using it back when they shut down the federal government a year ago last September. We need to understand this right wing for what it is. It is at its core, and if you want to say, no, no, Bob, calm down, take your medicine, you're wrong. If you want to say that, Dr. Bill, you know, you're free to. Tell me if I'm wrong. This is an anti-government, anti-American, Gerald, insurgency. Just because nobody's got any IEDs out on the side of the road doesn't mean it's not an insurgency. This is an insurgency against the very idea of our constitutional republic that they profess to want to protect. Any challenge?
No. Absolutely not.
I think I'll let that go. I don't have a rebuttal to that. Because, and unfortunately, you know, you're right. I see Blake and Manson in the chat. It's a destructionist agenda. And, yeah, that's right. I mean, and I'm like you, Bob. I don't try to focus the program on what's happening here in West Virginia, but I kind of pay more attention to what's going on here locally because it's easier to watch, for one.
Well, you know, the argument that I have made for years is that we sort of toddle along here in West Virginia, largely ignored by the rest of the nation. I mean, more people know about things going on in Mississippi than they do going on in West Virginia, because we're Appalachia, we're expendable, we're forgettable. Okay, the only time they ever parachute in here is when a mine blows up or some people get their water poisoned, et cetera. But for the longest time, and I'm talking about for just about the entirety of the 20th century, and I think you would agree, Dr. Bill, West Virginia has been the United States canary in the coal mine. I mean, for heaven's sakes, we started trying prohibition before the nation tried prohibition.
So, yeah. What you're saying then is that West Virginia's history pretty much supports the suggestion that one of the callers made earlier, that this is a test case. I mean, this is a trial balloon, so to speak, or something like that.
We've always been a test case.
Yeah.
With the rise of the railroads and the timber industry supporting the coal industry, we were a test case for how much they could get away with in terms of abusing the general populace. And they found out they could get away with just about anything they wanted.
Yeah.
We should probably have Keith Lilly in here for a little discourse on the Bourbon governors.
Yes.
Well, one thing that at least it's always seemed that way to me is West Virginia has always been 20 to 30 years behind the rest of the country. It seems like we're always lagging behind. We're living, you know, two decades behind everyone else. And I think what's such a shock about this is, bam, now we're thrown right up front. And maybe that's part of my problem with being able to absorb what's going on here. I mean, this is really, there's a lot of stuff going on here that's just plain out bad. And they're going to do it. I mean, hell bent. They're not listening to anyone. They don't give a damn. It's going to happen. Count on it. And the other thing that one of the guys I was talking with today earlier about is, you know, we know it's going to happen. We're just going to try to control the hemorrhaging until 2016. Because I think in 2016 my personal belief is they're going to overreach here and it's going to change. But, you know,
you, sir, are an optimist.
Well, I try to be. And then my next concern is, if it does change, say, in 2016, are we going to have any Democrats with the balls to to undo what these guys did. That's my biggest concern. I'm not too concerned about it turning around. I think it will.
Once they have sold this bill for, once they have sold this bill on the notion that they're doing it for Jesus, it will be trumpeted from every fundamentalist pulpit in the state. At which point, the faithful will. I mean, how can you not get behind this bill? Except for those of us like Dr. Bill, you, the Horn Family Commune Congregation, me. Except for those
who can think for themselves.
Well, but not, and the one, but the ones who also were taught that there is a world outside of West Virginia, that there is a nation outside of the United States. How could you disagree with this bill if you yourself have no basic bedrock understanding of the world itself, and the only teaching you get is from Fox News and a lying preacher?
Well, that's where I lay most of the blame.
Sorry, I just got kind of dogmatic, Bill. I heard a there.
No, I think that the point that was made about the Democratic Party is well taken, because at the time I didn't really realize the significance of what he was saying. But when Daniel Hall of Wyoming County switched parties in order to give the Republican Party a one vote majority in the West Virginia Senate, his justification for changing what parties was that in West Virginia, it really doesn't matter all that much which party you're in. They're pretty much all basically the same. And at that time, I didn't appreciate what he was saying. But the fact of the matter is, there's not an opposition or a minority party in the West Virginia legislature to buck any of this stuff, because the vast majority of people in it buy into this crap.
And the
Democratic Party, and I keep going thinking about Joe Manchin here, because he's been arguing over and over again that West Virginians are different. And basically what he's been aiming to do is separate the Democratic Party in West Virginia from the National Democratic Party. And he successfully did it. And I think the move that Daniel Hall made, and the fact that there really wasn't much more of much more opposition to that than there was, suggests that he's exactly right.
Because he wasn't a Democrat to begin with.
No, exactly. And I was reading in the last week that Puccio has retired as head of the Democratic Party in West Virginia, and the justification was that his primary interest was to build a constituency for Joe Manchin, and now that he's gone, maybe the West Virginia Democratic Party can begin to stand for some of the things that the Democratic Party historically has always been about standing for. So
I don't think it's going to change, Dr. Bill, because it's still laden with Manchin cronies, at least from what I see. And the only way that it's going to get better is if people like us get in on the executive committees, our county executive committees, and we take over our party. We take our party back. And I mean, that's the way I see it. Now, I could be totally wrong.
I think you're exactly right. And of course, I can't forget the fact that Gail Manchin is chair of the State Board of Education.
That ain't an accident.
Oh, boy.
That's a feature, not a flaw.
Yep. Although I will say that Gail Manchin is a big supporter of the Common Core standards.
Well, until someone tells Joe not to be.
Yeah.
Right.
Until the full implications of the Common Core standards become clear, because this is totally contradictory to the standards.
I think that's a good observation as well, Dr. Bill. This is a way of assaulting Common Core, without saying we're assaulting Common Core.
This is business as usual in our classrooms, and the Common Core was designed to challenge that, and it's not going to happen. It's clearly not going
to
happen.
Not to change the subject, but one thing really quick before I go, I wanted to say an experience I wanted to share with everyone. One of the big things for me right now with my work is the prevailing wage repeal. And I got an email this morning, you know, it was Senate Bill 361, which was just, you know, Craig Blair introduced it. It just repealed of prevailing wage period. They didn't strike through anything. They just repealed it and named a section of the code. They want to fast track it. And I told the guys at work, I said, you know, you guys need to write, you know, get on your iPhones and your smartphones, you're on them anyway, at lunch, type a little email to your representatives, tell them, you know, to your state senators, tell them, you know, this is bad for your employer, it's bad for the state. And, well, we're screwed anyway. I said, well, if you don't do anything, you know, you're definitely going to be. And yeah. I think that's part of the problem with a lot of this stuff we see coming through this legislature. Nobody's saying anything. Guys like that, I don't care until it's too late.
Yeah.
But, you know, isn't that always the case, though?
So. Yeah. Well, it is.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And again, I think that, the very subtle threat of this legislation about removing teachers from the classroom and blackballing them is an indication as why they don't. We've been pretty ruthless in silencing opposition. I mean, there's no question. So.
Well, yeah. I mean, just,
you know.
That shocks me that you got the response that you did, Gerald, because your reply is perfect. Yes. You know what? They're going to do it anyway. Well, when you sit there on your hands, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Look at the turnout. Look at the voter turnout in November. We've got this legislature because people stayed home.
That's
exactly
right.
And that's exactly what was going through my mind when he said that. You're part of the problem.
Yeah.
And they
were able to buy the state, and nobody cared enough to object.
Well, you know, they've been buying Supreme Court seats, state Supreme Court seats, and things like that in this state for a long time. It's nothing
right.
new.
Hello, Brent Benjamin.
Brent Benjamin,
yeah.
For the sake of the kids.
Yeah.
Remember that? Every time I hear that, I think of Brent Benjamin and Don Blankenship buying that seat for him, and it worked well. I mean, the people of this state are easily bought, and that's a fact. I mean, it's just a sad fact, but it's true.
If you dangle a few jobs at the end of it, people in this state will go along with anything.
Well, they don't have to be real; just a promise of them.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Even if
I don't know. I don't know. I was excited when we began tonight. I'm not sure whether I'm closing the evening being as excited or not. I'm a little bit.
Yeah,
you know.
But the conversation is magnificent, isn't it,
Dr.
Bill?
It's fabulous. Oh my God, it's great. I love it. I love it.
The probably the best thing to realize is, you know, there are people like us who are trying to make a difference. So, I guess take some solace in knowing that you're not alone out there in West, by God, Virginia Stan.
In point of fact, Gerald, if I could interject this for just a moment, I got a note from Robert in Australia who said, some good news, since glorious leader Tony Abbott knighted a foreign prince, and he really did, his popularity has really dropped. Even inside the Liberal Party, which is Australia's Conservative Party, is he on the way out? Robert says, I hope so, as he wants to reintroduce work choices. Work choices, Robert notes, is our version in Australia of right to work.
To work.
Maybe
to build on something that our buddy Michael in Madison was laughing about a couple of nights ago, maybe this evening, talking about this in West Virginia context, has been a little case of Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra, Shaka, when the walls fell.
There's that Star Trek reference.
There's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. But, you know, maybe this is, maybe, and I think it goes to my thesis that West Virginia is, in many ways, West Virginia is a metaphor for America. And this is a metaphor that we don't want to find out is real,
yeah.
If there's any way of stopping it. Gerald, thank you very much for this evening, and thank you.
Gerald, thanks. Thanks a million.
This is great, Bob. Thanks for taking my call, and it was a good conversation. Thanks. It was wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you, Joe.
See you guys later.
Bye now. Gerald calling from the Kanawha Valley. Thanks very kindly for the call, Gerald.
It's kind of interesting to me where these calls come from, Bob. It's really fascinating.
South Carolina.
Texas.
Yeah. And the thing is, there have been more calls coming in while these have been, and that's kind of one of the things that we deal with since the Comrex unit got burned up by the fine folks at Shentel Cable.
Yeah.
But the six lines versus one or two.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, there's another call coming in. Before I go to the phone, let me say this. I want to thank David in Australia for providing us all with a Have a Show on Me tonight. You know, I mentioned at the beginning of the program we try to raise $150, and he took it upon himself to simply say, I'll do that. And so he took care of fundraising for this evening. If anyone would like to help get ahead for tomorrow, that would be wonderful. If anyone would That's like great. To respond to David's kind contribution and carry it forward, that would be wonderful. So I just wanted to mention that by way of thanks and by way of letting people know that at least tomorrow we won't be entering the program in a hole. Is that you? This may get confusing. I think we've got Bill. Is that you, Bill?
Yep, it's me.
Okay, so we got Bill and Bill.
Hey.
Yep. Good
hey,
evening, Dr. Bill. How are you?
How are you? I'm great, sir. How are you?
I hear you a lot. What? I listen to you a lot, and because the weakest part of my American history is probably the constitutional era. Civil War to where I can't, get it out of my mind, and of course everything else has come since then.
Yeah.
But if I just accepted the Constitution as it was taught to me at school, which I get on my diet out of school, and they teach me this type of thing. But you guys are really on it. You're right, Bob. What they're doing in West Virginia is they're setting the table, is what they're really doing. Because my generation thought we had buried the John Birch Society in the right wing in 64. And so much for that idea.
Well, you did, Bill, but rather like vampires and zombies, they refused to stay buried. You know, when Richard Nixon was finally shown to be the tin horn grifter and anti-constitutional thug that he was, everybody stopped and had tea and cake and said, look, good has triumphed over evil. And it wasn't even a decade before we had, barely a decade, before we had Ronald Reagan's cronies out there tap dancing on the Constitution again.
Yep. Now, that guy was, I'll never forget the story about him at the convention in 52. He was a Republican by that time, and he got out of the cat taxi, and there was a guy with a World War II uniform on. He had a thing on the car, a loudspeaker, and he was pushing for height. And Reagan made some really nasty remarks to this vet, because I don't know how much combat Reagan saw, not much, I imagine, in World War II. But that's what these people, and he was just. Goldwater begins to look good next to Reagan. That's what shocks you.
Well, Goldwater doesn't begin to. Barry Goldwater looks like a peacenik next to George W. Bush.
Yeah.
Yes. And you, Bob, you and I talked about the Bush family. We're both cut. And I guess it was George's brother, Prescott, who went to China to help open up the trade. Because this is, you and I have talked about why they love Chiang Kai-shek. Because they could do business with the cheapest laborers they could find, and the hell with the American public, whether you got to have a job or not, It's the dollars and cents thing that bothers me about my fellow citizens. They haven't realized that this country, man for man, has not gotten richer. It's gotten poorer. Dr. Bill, you leave me in the dust sometime because, I mean, you're good. Your explanations are good, but there's so many things that I never thought about in the American Constitution. And, of course, the man who put it together.
Yeah.
You can give me a background on the man who put it together.
Well, I'm like you. As I think back to the fact that we've been on, it's like 23 months already. And I can't believe, I mean, I think back to when I started, I never believed that there was that much. But I keep going and going and going, and there's more and more and more, and it's unbelievable. We haven't had to do a whole lot of repeating, that's for sure.
Well, what you told us tonight about the northern states going along with the southern states with the racist attitudes, but I kind of knew that from living. I grew up in a low-class area. I blew off a 130 IQ by becoming a damn musician for most of my life, and you got to do something. Might as well do something you like.
That's right.
I have a buddy who taught history and we're close, and he just said, Billy, you can't believe what they wanted me to teach. He's retired now because he said you couldn't get anything going with these kids about them. And I have this funny idea that between the end of World War II and today, this country made some massive changes through the international part of our lineage or our country's, good, if you want to call it. And of course, what Bob and I have talked about, when Joe Stalin was running Russia, you didn't have to look far for a reason to be anti-communist.
That's right.
Because that man was...
That's how Daddy Koch became an anti-communist. Joe Stalin stiffed him.
Yeah, Stalin wouldn't pay him for the advice on oil, did he?
No, exactly.
Wouldn't pay him enough. Yeah. When it comes down to a lot of the problems come down to dollars, because these folks can't get enough dollars. And I think West Virginia has always had a problem because of the what there was for the capitalists to do was to destroy the state, digging and doing everything else, Coal mining was all I can talk about is seeing the movie Natron, and I was not aware of the Battle of Blair Mountain. I never learned anything about it, so you talked about it, Bob.
Yeah.
I'm going to clear this line and hope somebody else can get in. But Dr. Bill, thank you so much, and I'll keep listening to you.
Thank you, and I appreciate you so much. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bill. We'll talk soon. Bye now.
Thank you.
Well, Dr. Bill,
I got to tell you, buddy, we're 5 minutes before the end here.
See what happens?
I'll tell you.
I mean, one minute you're just toddling along, and the next thing you know, it's three hours are gone.
3 hours later. It's unbelievable. It's great. It's been great. I want to just make sure that I thank you for the opportunity and all those people that called. I really appreciate it so much.
Well, it's my pleasure, and in a way, what I'm hoping as well is that people will understand that when I'm sitting here on just about any given evening, although it tends to be Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday because of the way things roll out, and I'm talking about you bringing the axe handle, they have a little bit better knowledge, understanding of what we're doing here. Because, you're live 3 days a week on the horn between either 1 or 1:30 and 3 p.m. And you do a far better job than I, because I kind of lose my temper, my cool, my marbles, everything over this sort of stuff. But you, talking about teaching the social situation, the economics, the historical perspective, the setting around the Declaration of Independence, you did a solid month in July of last year that was nothing but that.
Yeah.
And it was breathtaking for me, and I've been listening to you you've been teaching me, Yeah, I feel like a little. I mean, okay, so like the Zen master is the sensei or whatever. Yeah. I'm whoever the guy that isn't the Zen master is, and you're the sensei. And I've been learning from you for a lot of years now. And I sat there in the month of July, just blown away. And I hope, I don't know what people are listening to between 1 and 3, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, but I'm hoping that a whole bunch of them will make it your program. And everybody needs to know that even when you're in the depth of trying to explain some point of America's history, that you welcome calls. And you welcome these conversations.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And you know, and Bob, when you go for too many days without a call, you begin to wonder whether there's anybody out there or not. And you know, and that's why it's so great. I mean, I get emails from people that kind of keep me going, because people do email me and I love that. I mean, it kind of invigorates me a little bit. But the point I was making to one of the callers earlier is, you know, I never dreamed that we would be going on this long. But it's the fact that there's so much out there and so many people that seem to want this stuff that keeps me going. I never dreamed at this point in my life that I'd be doing something like this and enjoying it. I love it. It's just wonderful. I've learned more. I've told people, seriously, that I've learned more about the founding and about the Constitution since I've been doing this program than I did in graduate school.
And so and so has everyone who has listened to you.
Well, thanks, Bob. And listen, I want to thank you again for giving me the opportunity tonight.
Well, it's a pleasure. Go and pour two fingers of something that's at least 80 proof and brown. And
I will.
And have yourself a good, relaxing evening. You certainly earned it.
I will, Bob. Thank you, my bud. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Bill. Bye now.
Bye-bye now. Bye-bye.
The one, the only, the inestimable Dr. Bill O'Brien. There is no one like him on the air in this country at all, period, anywhere. And it's time to get out of here, like now. So thank you all. Thank you. Thank you very kindly, David. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. And yes, Gina, always, 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 it's all for you. Good night.